Attention Austin guitarist, are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's my friend Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. You can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Gang, I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only does he do the very best job, but he has the fastest service and the best prices in town. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook or jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Gang, whether it's acoustic or electric, Jason is your guy. Get your guitars fixed. Gang, we all know Spotify has become the ultimate app destination for music lovers. I have an account and I love it. I find new music by following Tastemaker playlists, and I make my own playlist that I share featuring music from guests that have been on the show. But did you know that aside from millions of songs, Spotify now has thousands of podcasts? All your favorites are on there, including How Did I Get Here? That's right, we are on Spotify. Just go to Spotify.com or download the app from your app store, and don't forget to follow How Did I Get Here? That's Spotify. Millions of songs, now thousands of podcasts. Start listening now.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. How are you? We're living in a new time, huh? The guy's gone. We got a new guy. He came in. He brought in a nice tone and vibe that I think we can all get used to pretty quickly after 4 years of chaos and insanity, lies. Woof, man. What an exciting day that was, huh? Peaceful transition of power right here in our democracy, defining what is our American democracy. Great week, man. I've written some songs this week with people. I wrote a song with Jeff Plankenhorn, wrote a song with Gabe Rhodes, worked on a song with Robin Mordecai and Jeff Plankenhorn. Did a lot of stuff, did a lot of podcasts. I'm back in business, baby. Skyrockets and talks about doing shows again. Who knows what's going on? Guys, I have a great show for you guys today. Larry Seaman returned to the show today. He's got a brand new album out called Death Takes a Holiday. It just came out in October, produced by legendary power pop artist from the band 2020, Ron Flint, and features appearances from John D. Graham and Whit Williams from Cotton Mather. Always great to talk to Larry Seaman. He was in the legendary new wave band from here in Austin called Standing Waves in the late 70s and early 80s, and was part of the whole Raoul's and Clubfoot and Armadillo scene. He was on a couple years ago when he released his record, The Resurrectionist, that was also produced by Ron Flint. And from what I understand, they're working on a third record. So this is a trilogy between Larry and Ron. This record's great, man. Has amazing songs. This great song that he wrote with Walt Wilkins called Have You Seen My Bride? A great song that I'm super into called A Lighthouse in Your Eyes, which I play a little bit of here at the beginning of the conversation. But anyway, always great to catch up with Larry Seaman, a very talented musician and songwriter and also visual artist. He does this great, great collage with found objects, art, which you can find all of his music and his art and everything at LarrySeamanArtMusic.com. Get out there and check out Death Takes a Holiday. It's fantastic. You know, you might want to hear the record before you hear the conversation, because we talk a little bit about some of the songs and stuff. So if you haven't heard the record, jump out there and check it out. But if you have, check it out. Here it is, me and Larry Seaman chatting it up. Enjoy it. Let's get down.
Yeah, you get off that trip and you get on with it, living the dream when they say death takes a holiday. Seems like it's all okay. Feel like you found your place, then you're gone. Death takes a holiday. Death takes a holiday.
So once again, I like doing Zooms with you because I get to see your artwork in the background.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus the salsa that I'm sending to my daughter in Washington State.
Did you make that salsa?
No, it's just her favorite. So I'm sending her a care package.
I bet you've been pretty productive and prolific artistically during this lockdown?
I have. I was going to the studio like once a week or so, which was really great for my mental health. We had the basic tracks done on this last record,
right?
For the most part, before the pandemic hit. So I was able to go in and do overdubs and guitars and some more solo acoustic type songs.
Right.
And I'm now kind of moving a little more toward the visual art, my production time. A friend of mine from Dallas moved up to the Pacific Northwest last year, and she bought a piece of mine called Texas and sent me a message saying, could you do a piece for Pacific Northwest? So I'm hoping to finish that today.
Awesome.
The interesting part of it is the last time I was up there, I got some pieces of metal that had been in the bay for an incredible period of time. So they were rusted and crusty and had barnacles on them.
Oh, wow.
But so it was like around the metal, this corrosion formed. And the first piece I took to the welder, and we ended up destroying it, trying to weld it. I'm just gluing the second one, not taking any chances with it.
I understand that. Yeah. All right. So Death Takes a Holiday came out in October. What a great record, man. You worked with
Thank
Ron
you.
Flint.
Yeah. Yeah. He is so great to work with. After I did the last record, we're just kind of keeping rolling. He's got a great ear. He's very smart. He's very positive. So even if I'm, you know, singing flat or whatever, it'll be like, the phrasing on that was great. Can we do another one for pitch? Instead of, oh no, we need to do that again.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah. He seems like he would have a very gentle hand in the studio.
He does.
And also like a guy that's from the world of power pop music. Like, you know, having a guy that knows you're going to want a 12 string somewhere. You know what I mean?
Right. There's always an opportunity for 12 string.
There always is. And you had some really great, Whit Williams played on it. Who's just what a great guy.
Yeah. And he knows his way around the pop sounds as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Are you a Cotton Mather fan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you, since like the beginning, were you like going to see them? And
I saw them fairly early on, and I guess through Contiki.
Right.
And then I was moving in and out of town for a while. And then more recently hooked up with Dana Miser, who played with them. And he's another just wonderful on guy.
Yeah. I got to do one session with Whit, and what he came up with, just, it was all like first take shit. He's just so connected to his instrument, you know, and he's a quiet guy.
Command of the sound, and what he plays fits the song.
Yeah.
Almost more than anybody I can think of. You don't have to explain where you're trying to go. It's like he hears it and it's like, how's this for the perfect thing?
Right, right. Perfect. Yeah.
That's it.
As far as working with Ron on this record and on the last record, what was different about this record than last record? In the process.
Started to move more toward the same people playing on it.
Okay.
So it was a little more of a band sound going in. A lot of the band on the first one was the Mysticatos. And on this band, it was more Ron, Whit, and Dana and I.
Right.
So there was that. But then, you know, halfway into it, isolation set in, and that changed it a lot as well.
In what way? Tell me, like, how far into it were you when isolation started?
We had the basic tracks on all the rock songs except one.
Okay.
So one of the songs, it was one of the last two that I wrote, we programmed drums for.
Okay.
Instead of...
Oh, right. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
That's okay. So that was... and then the rest of it was just Ron and I did everything. No, that's not true. Walt Wilkins and Tina Wilkins came in and sang backup.
Right.
But it went from Ron and I would be there with, you know, Dana, or be there with Whit, to it's just Ron and I. In fact, when Tina did her vocals, I wasn't there when she did her vocals. So it was a much more isolated one-on-one sort of thing.
Yeah. I've recorded a couple of tunes throughout this isolation thing. And one of them, like, I sent a drum machine and me playing guitar and singing. And they just laid that down, and then the drummer played to that. And then we, you know, one by one, people went in and did their thing.
How did that work?
It worked out great. I mean, it's funny because I trust these guys, you know. I'd go back and listen to it the next day after they'd send me the track after the bass player had left.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I mean, it's good, guys. It was Scott Garber and John Chipman on drums.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, those guys, like, I think that, like, when you bring someone in, don't you bring someone in, like, because you want them to do what they do on your thing? Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a case of, you know, you bring in the gentle melodic acoustic guitar player and have them do Robert Quine.
Right.
You're here because of what you're good at.
Right.
But the drummers that can play to drum tracks, that's a whole upper skill level.
Right.
Ron and I are working on a song now that we did, we made an electronic drum part yesterday. And thankfully it wasn't as frustrating as I was afraid it was going to be, because, you know, it's like, it's a virtual Linn drum. And it's like, boy, I don't know, you know, only when we got into, here's the graphic picture of it. And it's like, oh yeah, move the bass drum, you know, a 16th of a beat to the left.
Right.
But even so, that's it's geometry and
well, it seems like maybe you lived a parallel life with the drum machine and electronic stuff, because you even like in the new wave stuff with Standing Waves, you that was still an organic rock and roll band playing.
Yeah,
it wasn't like you sounded like you know, the "Don't You Want Me, Baby" song.
Yeah. I never went there. Though I did do a song that that's on an Elektra compilation that's mostly electronic drums.
Yeah.
Called "Lovers on Fire," and it was a definitely sort of a thing. So that was enough of that for me, though.
Are you not? You're just not a fan of that for yourself.
Yeah, for me.
Yeah. It's hard because I use them to write a lot. They'll take me into a different place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like if you write with a different instrument.
Right, exactly.
What do you have? What's your drum machine? Is it on your computer, or is it a little handheld box?
No, I really like tactile things. I like things. I have a very hard time with stuff in the box and like, oh, I got this great UA, you know, preamp thing. Oh, I'd love to see it. You can't even turn the knobs or feel it or anything.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate it when the interface has a knob look to it, and it's like, oh, thank you, I feel more comfortable now.
Yeah, but there is still something about it. I got this Korg, like the Korg's making like these smaller drum machines, and it's got a speaker on it and stuff, and you can use batteries on it. So whenever I'm trying to come up with stuff. Do you sometimes go to different instruments to write?
Yes.
Any of the songs on this record, did you do that with?
No, these were all guitar.
Okay.
I'll occasionally go to piano or keyboard. I don't have one set up right now in the great shuffling. It's leaning against the wall at this point. But yeah, it's a good way to break out if I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And even playing different guitars. There's a Gretsch up at South Austin Music that's just really gorgeous.
Yeah.
Played it for a while the other day, and I played a Casino in the studio, which was fantastic. I'm thinking maybe I have to get one of those.
Yeah, definitely.
Just because the different feel of it takes my mind someplace else.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question about working with Ron. Does he, as a producer, like, I mean, at this point, you've written a song or two. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does he dig into the songs and like, hey, maybe add a thing here or maybe
yes,
shorten the chorus or, yeah?
Yeah, he will be a, you know, what if we flip these two chords or kind of needs a bridge or what would you think about trying so-and-so? In a couple of them, I was even to the point of, you know, I was offering him some songwriting credit. It's like, this wouldn't have happened without your suggestion. Or we'll, you know, this needs something and we'll pull out the acoustic guitars and play through it five different ways and go, oh yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
He's very good at that kind of, what if we did so-and-so. Another interesting thing is, I've learned over the years, particularly from being in bands where you have five different people with input arguing about it. It's like, you know, in the time you can spend 30 minutes arguing about it, or you could spend 10 minutes and play all five ideas once. And if you do that, 95% of the time, everybody's going to be like, oh yeah, that's the one.
Right. Right.
So yeah. So we're very much, well, let's try this. And see what works.
Do you, I know because of personal experience as well, are you more comfortable as a solo artist? Or did it take a while for you to get out of that band mindset where it was like, well, Larry, what do you think? And you'd like turn around and no one's there and you're like, oh shit.
I do miss the working it out. You know, just playing through it five times and then, I miss that aspect of it. But I don't have to second guess myself. You know, it's like, if I want to try it, I can try it. And, thankfully have somebody like Ron who's, has a discerning ear.
Right. Right. It's always good to have a partner of some sort in that way, you know.
Agreed.
Being able to.
Yeah, if I was doing this by myself at home, it'd be very different.
Is this record, it's coming out on vinyl this month?
Yes, next month. I got the test pressing today.
In February.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're, once we approve it, we'll find out, can we get it by Valentine's Day or, you know. We'll pick a release date once we talk to the pressing plant.
Okay.
On Monday.
And people can just go to Larry Seaman Art and Music .com for that.
Yep. Flack Records.
What's that?
It's on Flack.
Flack Records.
And that's where they can go to flackrecords.biz as well.
Okay. Writing that down. The song "Have You Seen My Bride?" You wrote it with Walt Wilkins.
Yeah.
And you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I read a little bit about that, about losing parents and kind of, did you guys bond on that level?
Yeah, he and I met when I was in high school, and his family moved in next door to us, and we used to carpool with his sister, and our parents became great friends. The last time I saw his parents was when they came to my dad's funeral. And then a short while after that, his mom died. And then last February, my mom died. And in the spring, his dad died. So they were all fairly close together.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
And so when I used to go see my dad in... he would ask after my mom by saying, "Have you seen my bride?" Because she was in memory care. And so it was like, rather than, "Have you seen Joanne?" Right. It was, "Have you seen my bride?" So I took that as the start of it. And thought that Walt would be the right person to go to with it. And his dad would ask him a similar thing. "Have you seen my love?" was he would say. And so those were the basis for two of the verses. So it seemed a good salute to our parents. That was a good one.
So finishing a record and putting it out under a pandemic, you can't play shows. What outside of getting a publicist, like what else were you able to do this time around?
Having my friend Mike Fickle made a video.
Fantastic.
For the single Levitate.
Okay.
And Levitate came about last January, I think it was, last winter. There was a Raoul's show at Sam's Town Point. And I opened the show acoustic and then got up at the end with the Skunks and joined them for Sister Ray, Velvet Underground song.
Right, right.
And we went off. It was like feedback, whammy bar, you know, outer space sort of a thing. And John D and I were laughing while we were playing. And the next day we were texting and he sent me a message. It was all caps. That said, Levitation. And I thought, I have a song from a couple of years ago that I wrote the first verse of and never did anything with called Levitate. So pulled it out, finished it off, and John D plays on it on the record.
Oh, fantastic.
Plays lap steel. And Mike Fickle's a photographer. He's got a bunch of great pictures of John D. And once I had an idea for the video, he had done a True Believers video. And I thought, I'll call him, and off we went.
Wow.
I shot some kids in my neighborhood in their towels as superheroes. And that was kind of the impetus of it. I sent that to him. I sent some a clip of film of my daughter back when she was in middle school, doing a dance. And he, from that, did the rest of it. It turned out great.
That's awesome. You were on stage, that was like last January with John D at that thing?
Yeah. I think it was January. It might have been December.
And Jesse?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at those guys... You know, when you were on stage and having that feedback madness and you looked and maybe you caught each other's eyes, just the decades, did they just rush back?
There is this joy of we're living in the moment like with the joy of living in the moment then, because that was, you know, for me, I was dropping in and out of college, you know, my taste veered out of the mainstream fairly significantly. And so when I found Raoul's, it was, man, you know, it's my people.
Yeah.
And so that was, yeah, it was a very, I'm at home, I'm in the pocket feeling. And yeah, we definitely got there again playing with the Skunks.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's some guys that it hasn't been, that long for me, but, you know, just maybe a decade shy, but they're guys that I still get together with and I have those moments with, like, musically, of that communication. You just look and you're like, oh, yeah. Like, we're like, we did this back in the war. You know?
It still works.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still happening.
Exactly. So you were... Have you done any live streaming?
Yeah. We did one when the CD digital release. We did it from Jumping Dog, and it was me, Ron, Steve McCarthy on drums, and John Sanchez on guitar.
Oh, fantastic.
And that was really fun. I shot another one since then. That's being edited right now. It's not a live stream, but it's a solo performance in the studio. And so that I'll put that out whenever we have the vinyl release date. That'll be the, you know, the event.
Right.
That goes with it.
What do you
think?
I
thought about doing a busking across town, you know, go stand in front of the Continental Club and play a song live, and then drive to Seaboys and stand in front and play a song.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing.
Do you know this artist Mobley from here?
Yeah.
He was doing a thing where he would just pull up in front of your house and have like a bunch of battery-operated shit and jump out and play a few songs, jump back in and take off. Yeah.
That's cool.
Personal concerts.
It's the... what's her name? The... from Boston, solo acoustic gal.
I don't know.
She was the queen of that. I remember one South by walking down Sixth Street, and it's like, oh, there's somebody busking up here, and I stopped. And it was like, oh my God, it's her. Yeah, she was pals with Elliott Smith and Kurt Cobain.
Oh wow,
she's a really wonderful. Record produced by the guy from the Bevis Frond.
You know everything about her except her name. That's amazing.
Mary. Shit.
I don't know.
Man, it'll come to me once we stop talking about it.
Okay. Well, we'll move on to another thing. What I was going to ask you is what do you make of all the live streaming? I mean, where do you stand on all that stuff, just as a person with a phone?
It's nice to be able to enjoy, you know, my friend's music. But it's also, I just ache for the visceral, you know, in a way it's a definitely double-edged sword in that I appreciate, boy, here it is. It's live music, but it's this whole, you know, the whole living through your screen thing.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. It's how do you listen to music? Like you obviously, like you, when you referred to, releasing a record, you said a CD. So do you listen to music on CDs, or do you Spotify it, or do you?
I do. I listen to CDs. I listen to the radio a lot.
What radio stations do you listen to?
Generally, KUTX and Sun Radio.
Yeah.
And co-op, depending on the time.
So you're on the fringe. Like you listen. Yeah, you've stayed outside the box for a long time.
But also KLBJ. It's like if I'm dialing around and it's like, man, I cannot find anything that, you know, either I like or doesn't irritate me. I'll dial to KLBJ and it's like, okay, it's the Who. You know,
right.
And it kind of cleanses my palate. I thought I could walk over here and find.
Oh, her album.
Yeah. Mary Lou Lord, there we go.
Mary Lou Lord, okay, now I remember her, yes. I think I remember when she was doing that. I don't think I saw one of those South Bys, but I think it was one of those things that, like, you ran into somebody at a place, they're like, oh, you wouldn't, you know, or you read about it in the Chronicle when they would release the Daily Chronicles and stuff like that.
Yeah, and she had, you know, she had a network, and probably still does for that matter, all over town or all over the country, where she, you know, if she's going to be in Austin today, she's got friends she can stay with in Austin.
Right.
So like no overhead other than, you know, gas.
Right.
Yeah. And this little battery powered triangular thing that's guitar amp and PA. Yeah, she's got it down.
Mary Lou Lord.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you some other stuff about recording and making the record. Were there any songs that you actually flat out wrote with Ron?
No.
Or were they all just you the only one you really co-wrote was with Walt?
That's correct.
Okay.
And some of them, you know, a lot of it would be I'd sit down and say, here are five songs. And a couple of them would be like, oh yeah, those are obvious, and a couple of others we'll see. So a fair portion of the songs are new. Death Takes a Holiday, When the Dreamtime Comes, All the Colors of the Dark. This Is Gonna Hurt. Have You Seen My Bride? Read Me Like a Book. Those are all pretty new. And then a couple of them, like Levitate, I had a part of and went back to. I sang in my chains like the sea I wrote in college.
Oh, really?
And yeah. I was an English major, and we were reading Dylan Thomas. This really great poem, and so I just took one of the lines from it and went on from there. Ironically, years later, I went to a songwriting class, we would play a song and she'd give us feedback. The woman said, you write like an English major. So this song is the proof. It's right out of Dylan Thomas. And let's see, Lighthouse in Your Eyes was also an older one. That was kind of one of those, hey, I can write a pop song. Bam. Here's a pop song.
Yeah. That's to me, that's the one that cut right through. Like that was the one. Like, oh yeah. But I love that kind of music. And that's the thing that I feel like there's a family, obviously, like this Austin music family. It goes back way back, and there's people from all kinds of shoots. But then I think there are sub families that, even though you and I haven't really hung out together, we are cousins in a way, because we are from that world.
Exactly.
Of pop music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
This, so that one was originally called Longing and Despair. But then I realized that I have this, it's death and dark and chains maybe I need to brighten it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Plus, when I was putting the record together, I ended up assembling it very much with vinyl in mind. So kind of the existential songs are all on one side and the love songs are all on the other side.
Right, right. So you get to freak out with anxiety on side A, flip it over and like chill out.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if the stuff that I'm working on now becomes another album, I think I'll go even further in that and have like all one side be solo acoustic songs and all the other side be really electric rockin' songs.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it's starting to shape up in my mind, but things can change.
So you're already on the next record.
Yeah, we started on a song. I have a new song called The Party's Over. And I recorded it for the acoustic, the record release thing, which is called the Death Takes a Holiday Special. So from that, it's like, oh yeah, it's a single.
Yeah.
And so we approached it, we started it just as a single. But then since then, I started writing another song, and then recalled a song from a couple of years ago, And it's like, I played those two for Ron, and he was like, oh yeah, these are great. So it's like, well, maybe it is the start of another record. We'll see.
Takes a lot to make records and put them out. Do you feel like it's difficult to get? Because I feel like it's difficult to get an entire record across to people the way records were once taken in, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, and the idea of... I think I'm maybe a rarity among my friends, or that's an overstatement. I think a lot of people don't listen to an album. They listen to songs.
Right.
And they make a playlist. Oh, I like this song. I like this song. I like this song, which is a different thing than here's this album, which has a start and a finish. And it's a whole broader, deeper experience than just a song.
Right.
And so, yeah, I definitely of that. It's all of a piece mindset.
Yeah. It's funny because I did both. Didn't you like make mix cassettes too?
Oh yeah.
And like, yeah, like for road trips or something or.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorites was Flipper had a song called Sex Bomb.
Uh-huh.
And it starts and stops like 20 times. And so like it starts grinding away and it's like the vocalist says, well, I mean, it's just that, never mind, forget it. You wouldn't understand. Oops. And it stops. And then it starts up again. Never mind. You wouldn't understand. And so I, at one point, was making this mix cassette and I did the first section and then I played a Pretender song.
Oh.
Second section, and then I did a Squeeze song.
That's
and
cool.
The next one. So I made this, I spread this single out over two sides of a cassette.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
Who are some of, you mentioned Squeeze and the Pretenders, who are some of the biggest sort of influences songwriting wise on you?
Oh, probably Beatles, just because I just grew up with that.
Is there any particular, let's dig deep into that. Is there any particular Beatle era that you took the most from?
Yeah, probably the Revolver, Rubber Soul.
Okay.
Because it's like at that point, it really gets interesting.
Right.
It's like incredible craft
up
to that point. And then it's like, oh, well, you can do this or you can do that. And I think probably the influence of Pot on their songwriting and just less and less we don't have to be, you know, the cute little mop tops on stage.
Right.
We can find our own way. And that kind of exploration and expansion. Yeah. That's really the sweet period for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the entrance of the good period for me. In mine, just to let you know, is Magical Mystery Tour. Like that's kind of like where I live in my mind as a
nice.
Person influenced by the Beatles. Who else?
Neil Young.
Okay.
And David Crosby. When I was learning to play guitar in high school, I got a guitar when I was 12 and I learned House of the Rising Sun and Little Red Riding Hood. And that was pretty much it. And then in high school, I started singing with these two guys, brothers, John and Jerry Barton. And we would do, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, harmony type things. And that's when I picked up the guitar again. And I had a David Crosby book that had his songs from, I guess, the first Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, his solo record, and Bird's songs.
Okay.
And it had weird tunings, and that was a big thing for my guitar playing.
Did you do weird tunings?
Some. The main one I've used lately is, it's all D's and A's.
Okay.
It's D-A-D, D-A-D. So it's monstrous. It's like a Bob Mould you know, boy, you hit that thing open, it's just like,
right.
This powerful wall. So that's the main one. And then occasionally I'll just, you know, make something up. Without a goal in mind, I'll just tune the guitar differently. I came across a thing the other day about guitar tunings, and there were like 10 of them. So I bookmarked that, and that's part of my homework to go explore some of those.
Yeah.
There's a banjo tuning that's apparently one of Keith Richards' big ones, where you take the top string off.
Right.
But I haven't played with that yet.
That's that thing that that's that thing when you see a band at a bar and they play like Honky Tonk Women, and they start it out and it almost sounds like it, or like Start Me Up, you're like, oh, they almost it. There's something. Right. What are you doing? And it's the tuning, and then you get dig deeper, and you're like, oh, he takes the E string off.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of animal does that?
Or you go see a band, and it's like, why does that guy have 6 different guitars on stage?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's why.
Well, that I think that's part of the reason. I delved into tunings a little bit in the mid '90s.
Uh-huh.
A very little bit. And then I realized that would entail, you know, God forbid this song gets on your album, then all of a sudden you're lugging everything to a gig. And I was, maybe it was laziness.
Yeah.
That kept me from doing it.
Just stick with drop D. It's the easiest one, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's the only one. And that, and kind of the one that you did is just making the leaving the G string it as it's as a G, like dadgad is I think what they call it.
Yeah.
All right, so hopefully you'll be finishing a record sometime this year. Do you feel like you're going to be on a cycle of releasing a record every year? Didn't you put out that last record in 2019, The Resurrectionist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like time is short.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's, you know, the pandemic or, you know, my age or a confluence of things, but yeah, I feels like now's the time to get busy.
Yeah. Yeah. Does this, any of this seep into your writing, into your newest songs?
Yes. The Party's Over, definitely. New one I'm working on is kind of dealing with that life on screens and just kind of ennui, trapped,
yeah,
feeling. So yeah, it's in there.
Yeah, in this sorry, go ahead.
And then there's the, gosh, I need to write a song like Levitate every once in a while to pick myself up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of people. A lot of people are writing and releasing music in this time and putting out videos that are like montages of news clippings from the last year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems like there might be some kind of, because I do feel like music. And I try not to be like get off my lawn, but at least like mainstream music is usually pretty vapid, but there's no like rock. And it seems like all of music that is consumed by the masses seems to have really been dumbed down.
Yeah.
Right. Even down to like the craft of songwriting, where I'm all for occasionally writing a song to a loop of a chord, and you can write a chorus over it and you can write a verse over it, never change the thing. That's mm-hmm. cool every once in a while, but you listen to any kind of like mainstream radio and sort of like what the masses are consuming now, and it feels horrible to say this because it makes me feel like I sound old, but it's almost like the computers are doing it. You know, it's so on the grid. Everything is so tuned and so this yeah. and so that, you know,
and formulaic, and predictable. And I have this thing, which is probably an indication of age as well. It's like, I've heard this before.
Right.
This sounds like something else. Even to the point of, there was one playing the other day, and it was like, oh, I recognize the singer. And what was that other thing that she did? And it's like, oh, yeah, they're kind of nursery rhymey,
right,
sort of things. And I was like, okay, well, I guess that's her, you know, that's her vein that she's mining, which, you know, is fine for her. But yeah, it's just like, I already know everything that's going to happen. And if I keep listening, it'll irritate me.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, the individual's voice. And then when you hear it, it's so great. I mean, that was one of the things about Courtney Barnett when she came out. I was like,
right,
nobody else sounds like this. Right. This is really her.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I, you know, and well, in her music as well, it had it. Is the there's so much being made because you can in your room, where the communication, like, I love somebody like Billie Eilish. Like, that's someone that I feel like is new and gives me hope for the future and gives me, yeah, hope for the mainstream. Like, if that many people like her and they like someone, right, that's that cool at 17, also imagine what she's going to be doing at 25. You know, right, what I mean?
Yeah.
But her music lacks it too. But with the Courtney Barnett, there's a human element to people communicating with each other while making this music in the moment, which I feel, mm-hmm, like has been totally taken away. You know?
Yeah. And I think so much of that is programming,
yeah,
both in the radio sense and in the, we're playing our music on computers.
Right, right. It seems like at this point, I don't know why there wouldn't be more people like KUTX and Sun Radio around the country, because it just seems like there is a need for a bigger outlet, a place where people can tune in and get new music. You know?
Get more variety,
yeah,
get diversity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think sadly there is a, you know, kind of a, oh, I'm in my comfort zone, you know, I'm,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
right here, yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's,
so, you know, maybe that's a security thing too.
It's,
you know,
it's funny, it seems like with internet and social media and all this kind of stuff, you really can just like, you can take in the news from an angle that you want. Hear just,
yes,
the music that you want. There's no longer,
yeah,
being exposed to new things that challenge you and make you uncomfortable, because you just don't have to.
Yeah.
I mean, even right down to like sitting in front of the TV and vegging out. Now you can just veg out to your favorite episode of your favorite show from like 15 years ago at any given moment.
Right.
As opposed to like, oh, this is what Roseanne is? You know what I mean?
Sadly, yes, I do know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this record, Death Takes a Holiday, people that haven't heard it yet should get out there and check it out. People can find you at LarrySeamanArtMusic.com. This is on all the streaming services.
Yep.
And also going to be available on vinyl in February.
That's right. Just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
How does it sound on vinyl?
It sounds really smooth. It's,
yeah.
It's almost like different mixes, you know, going from CD, which is, you know, it's bass, it's got more bass to it.
Right.
And, my main amp is in the shop, and which has, you know, lots of tone control on it. And I'm using my girlfriend's amp now, which is just, you know, here's the on button, here's the station, there's no balance,
right,
there's no tone. So it's really different going from vinyl to CD. It's just like, in fact, what did I play the other day? Joni Mitchell record, I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, Hieta?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And man, the bass was so loud on it. Jaco Pastorius.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, God. Uh-oh.
I love Joni Mitchell, and I love Jaco Pastorius. So anything else, man, I'm missing? It's good to see your face.
Let's see. I don't think so.
No.
I think we hit it. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it.
Of course.
There was one other thing.
What was it?
The song, All the Colors of the Dark.
Uh-huh.
Which is a, you know, bluesier, jazzier sort of a thing than I usually do.
Right.
That one, I had seen a photograph of a woman crying with her makeup running down.
Right.
And my mind just went off on this whole noir Western story. She and her partner are driving through the night, getting away from some bad thing that happened, possibly murder. I just pictured the whole thing. It was like the movie was there, and I just wrote the song to go with the movie. And as I was thinking about it, it was like, this should be Jamie Harris and Mary Gauthier as the Mary's the stoic
driver
of the truck, and Jamie is the blonde with the tears.
Yeah.
So I pitched it to him, but so far there's no backing.
Oh, come on, you guys.
That's right. Hollywood, we're knocking.
I love Jamie Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She seems to be doing okay in Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss her, though. I just was texting with her last night.
She was nice.
Reading a book that she was enjoying.
Excellent. What is it?
The Kathy Valentine, Oliver. Did you read that book?
I haven't read it yet.
So good,
man. It's on my list.
It's heavy, man. Well, dude, thank you again for doing the show. People need to check out this record, Death Takes a Holiday. And if you missed it, Resurrectionist, also a great album. And I guess you're working on a you and Ron trilogy.
It could be.
Yeah.
Could be. And the Death Takes a Holiday special, hopefully coming as a vinyl release online celebration.
Sometime in February. People can, if you check in at LarrySeamanArtMusic.com, you'll have links to the socials there as well.
There you go.
And you'll advertise when the show is.
Yep. Coming soon to a computer near you.
Yes. Well, dude, thank you again for doing the show. It's great
thank
to catch
you,
up
Johnny.
With you and see your face. Hopefully we'll get to see each other in real life again soon.
I know.
Yeah, man.
Playing out.
Yeah, fingers hopefully crossed. So. Take care,
thank
buddy.
You.
Thanks, man.
All right. Bye. Death takes a holiday
in the sunshine. Yeah, the great Larry Seaman. What a great talent, that man. Great songwriter, great singer, great musician. And great artist, visual artist. Check out his scene at LarrySeamanArtMusic.com. And don't forget, man, check out his album, Death Takes a Holiday. Just dropped in October, produced by the great Ron Flint, featuring amazing performances by Whit Williams, John D. Graham, and many more, including Ron Flint and, of course, Larry Seaman himself. Check out his artwork. And, man, if you want to really get into it, his last record, Resurrectionist, that came out in 2019, great record. Also, yeah, his old band, Standing Waves, great band. They put out some great music. You can find it out there. Go to Larry Seaman Art Music. Get involved. And don't forget when you're out there checking out Larry Seaman Art Music, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast. Wherever you find podcasts, you'll get a new podcast every Tuesday and every Friday featuring me talking to some great musician or artist, whatever it is. Yeah, or a combo of the two, much like the great Larry Seaman. Let's hear the rest of his song, Death Takes a Holiday, the title track from his album, Death Takes a Holiday, available now. You have a great day, whatever you're doing, okay? Stay safe out there, man. Keep those numbers down, you know? Wear that mask. Don't go a lot of places. Don't be weird. Don't freak out. If you need to talk to someone, call someone you love. All right, let's hear some more music from Larry Seaman. I'll stop talking. Let's get down.